Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Crisis Next Door, a weekly report on the biggest conflicts around the world. With host Jason Brooks.
Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. It's been 13 years since Israel and Hezbollah locked horns in the 2006 Lebanon War, resulting in the deaths of 1,300 Lebanese and 150 Israelis. Things are once again heating up along the border, threatening to reignite hostilities. Joining The Crisis Next Door to talk about the situation is Randa Sleem, Senior Fellow and Director of the Conflict Resolution and Track 2 Dialogues Program at the Middle East Institute. Randa, thank you for joining The Crisis Next Door.
Thank you, Jason. Good to be with you.
Lebanon's President Michel Aoun recently said that Israeli drone strikes on Hezbollah and another Iran-allied militia group in Lebanon were a declaration of war. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah also pledged to shoot down any Israeli aircraft entering Lebanon's airspace, as well as retaliating against future Israeli strikes against Hezbollah fighters in Syria. Randa, you've written that the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah has entered a new phase. How dangerous is this new phase?
It is very dangerous because there are no rules of the game between the two countries regulate this conflict that has been going on between them for a long time. As you put it, after the 2006 war, the last military confrontation between Hezbollah and Israel, there was somehow a tacit understanding reached between Israel and Hezbollah on the rules of the game. And these rules of the game basically said Israel will not target Hezbollah personnel. Israel will not attack Hezbollah's bases inside Lebanon. Hezbollah cannot do operation inside Israel. Hezbollah cannot target Israeli soldiers or kidnap Israeli soldiers, as happened in 2006 as a prelude to the war then. And those rules of the game pretty much survived. Every now and then there was a violation, like in 2015, Israeli Air Force attacked a convoy of Hezbollah and Iranian Revolutionary Guard operatives that were at the time present in the Golan, on the Syrian side of the Golan Heights, between Israel and Syria, and killed the son of Imad Maghniyeh, a senior, highly revered Hezbollah military commander, killed a senior member of the Iran Revolutionary Guard who was part of the convoy. And right after, Hezbollah retaliated with a calibrated, limited attack inside Lebanese-Israeli contested territory known as the Shebha Farms, and at the time killed, I think, two Israeli soldiers. But it was an attack that was limited and immediately followed by messaging between the two parties that they want to restore the status quo ante. They want to go back to the rules of the game. And since Hezbollah entered the Syrian war to support Bashar al-Assad in the civil war in Syria in 2012-2013, Israel has been attacking Hezbollah convoys in Syria, has been attacking Hezbollah, military installation, Iranian military installation. But Israel has taken, has been very careful about not targeting not targeting Hezbollah fighters, not targeting Hezbollah militants. So, and that was okay by Hezbollah. But as I said, the rules of the game was no attack in each other's territories, i.e. Lebanon and Israel. So in recently, last 10 days, I think, Israel did two attacks, which according to Hezbollah, violated those rules of the game and changed the rules of the game. And so we are now in a state of no rules, and hence it is dangerous. And these two attacks were, one, Israel attacked a cell, Iranian Hezbollah cell in Syria that was, according to Israeli military force, sources, was planning a drone attack, weaponized drone attack inside Israel. So they attacked that cell before they launched the drones and killed two Hezbollah operatives who were part of that cell. And shortly thereafter, that attack on Syrian territory was followed by two weaponized drones, Israeli drones, sent into Hezbollah's stronghold in Beirut, southern suburbs of Beirut. These two drones did not lead to any kind of casualties, but it created some material damage. But it was a message from Israel by sending these drones inside Hezbollah's stronghold, basically a message to Hezbollah leadership. This is where the area also, southern suburbs of Beirut is the area where a lot of the Hezbollah senior leaders live with their family. It was a clear message also from Israel is that we are going to get you wherever you are, you Hezbollah leaders. And so after these two attacks, which really happened within hours of each other, Nasrallah made a speech and he said, okay, the old rules of the game that have been in place between us regulated the conflict, ensured a status of peace, fragile, but peace since 2006 between the two countries now is ended. And now we are entering a new phase. And I think the recent retaliation by Hezbollah last Sunday in response to this attack on the southern suburbs of Beirut marks the beginning of this new phase, which will very much be marked by a pattern of, you know, attack, counterattack, attack, counterattack. For the time being, both sides would like to keep these attacks and counterattack limited in scope, not degenerate into a larger war. But, you know, when you do this pattern of attack and counterattack, there is always an element of miscalculation and error, and that can lead to a larger war.
Israel has been very active across the region, hitting Iranian targets in Iraq, Syria, of course, Lebanon. Why do you think Tel Aviv has broadened its approach? Is this really about its rivalry with Iran?
It is, I think, proxy war, you know, for some time, especially since Iran came on force in to Syria to support the regime of Bashar al-Assad and have now entrenched itself. I mean, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards now have entrenched themselves in Syrian's military and intelligence services. They have developed a network and brought into Syria a network of Shia militias from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, Lebanon, Hezbollah, Iraqi Shia militias that over the last 3 years have been working and have succeeded in helping Assad stay in power. And so Israel has been Israeli officials have been talking about basically three threats facing them. The first one is the Iranian nuclear threat. And so we know that Israel has been working for some time, a long time, going back to the Obama administration, even before that, and now especially with the Trump administration, to make sure that there are no dialogues between the United States and Iran, to make sure that there are heavy sanctions, you know, imposed on Iran, and with the objective of denying Iran a path to nuclear weapons. So that's the first existential threat, which Israelis said, which is an Iranian nuclear weapon, and they're going to resort to any measures to prevent that from happening. That's one. The second threat that they have been talking about recently, again, starting, especially after the Iraq war, when Iran came in and into Iraq and gained a major foothold in support of the Shiite political coalition in Iraq, especially when the Americans were there. And then since the beginning of the civil war, they came on force into Syria to support Bashar al-Assad. So you have this now what we call a corridor or a land bridge that goes all the way from Iran through Iraq to Syria to the Mediterranean, which Iran could use to transport weapons, to transport personnel across these three countries. So you have this whole axis now, which is very strongly affiliated with Iran, and which Israel views as also another threat to its own security. It gives basically Iran a presence at the border of Israel in two countries, in Syria and in Lebanon. And the third threat that recently Israeli officials have been talking about, and they said it has now become their priority number two, is what they call, there is the Hezbollah precision guided missile project. Hezbollah has always said they have thousands of missiles. However, these missiles have always lacked in accuracy. They were not precision-guided missiles. And so not being precision-guided, I mean, of course, they can, you know, when they send them across the border, as happened in 2006, the damage is very limited in terms of material damage and in terms of what threat. Since 2006, one of the lessons that the Hezbollah has taken from the war in 2006, along with the Iranians, their pattern, is that they need to really shift their missile arsenal into a precision-guided missile arsenal. And that, according to Israel, is an existential threat, because once Hezbollah has these the missiles that they have right now, you know, hundreds of thousands of them, upgraded to be precision guided, then they can target critical infrastructure installation, electrical plants in Israel, nuclear power plants in Israel, airports, cities, with high level of accuracy. And they can be, in that respect, much more lethal and much more, powerful in terms of their impact. And so Israel saying now that this precision-guided missile project that Hezbollah is developing is not only being developed in Lebanon, it's being developed in weapons factories that are controlled by the IRGC, the Iran Revolutionary Guards, in Syria. Some of the elements of these missiles are being shipped from Iran and stored in weapons depots that are controlled by militias in Iraq, Shiite militias that are linked to Iran. So they are looking at this Iran regional project on one hand as being a threat, because it gives Iran, as I said, a presence, a major presence on two of Israel's borders. But also they look at this Iran region project as enabling Hezbollah's precision guided missile project, which for Israel is an existential threat.
Even without the precision guided missiles, Hezbollah has clearly built up its capabilities since the 2006 war, when it had around an estimated 15,000 missiles. Now you've got some estimates putting upwards of 150,000 rockets and missiles in southern Lebanon pointed at Israel. Does that missile buildup change the calculus for Israel's military?
Until, you know, I mean, it looks like, I mean, with the Iron Dome and with, you know, a lot of the air defense capabilities that Israel has, and Israel military superiority in this field, thanks to, you know, a lot of U.S. technology and U.S. assistance, I think until recently they have felt they can deal with it. I think the precision guided, this upgrading of the missile stock that Hezbollah has, is what has now been, you know, mentioned by Israeli intelligence and military official as being the existential threat. It's not the regular kinds of missiles. And until now, even according to Israeli intelligence estimates, Hezbollah has anywhere from 6 to 12 precision-guided missiles. And so the plan for Hezbollah, according to these to the Israeli intelligence officials, is for Hezbollah to upgrade the stockpile that you talked about, the 100,000, you know, missiles, into a precision-guided missile stockpile. And that is something that Israel feels that it's going to be a source of major, you know, threat to its, as I said, to its critical infrastructure. And as many Israeli officials said, I mean, it can bring major cities in Israel to a halt, you know, if this kind of missiles are lobbed in a future war by Hezbollah against Israel. And so hence, the problem is that, can they stop this project? I don't think so. I think they can delay it. So even if there is a war and Israel goes into Lebanon in force and destroyed most of what they feel are, what they think are storage facilities for these missiles or weapons production facilities for these missiles, I think they can delay this project by a few years. But the know-how, the capacities, the will to acquire these missiles is going to be there for a long time, especially because Hezbollah sees that in order to maintain this mutual deterrence equation against Israel, they need these missiles as an important critical component of this mutual deterrence regime between Hezbollah and Israel.
You're listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks, and we're talking about the growing confrontation between Lebanon and Israel with Randa Sleem, Senior Fellow and Director of the Conflict Resolution and Track 2 Dialogues Program at the Middle East Institute. Hezbollah, of course, has been critical for Bashar al-Assad's survival in Syria, but the group has also taken major casualties in the fighting. How much of a factor is that for Hezbollah in potentially tangling with Israel?
In fact, that's, I mean, until now, Hezbollah has been very careful, as I said, between 2012, I mean, since, in fact, since 2006, and more so since 2012, this is when Hezbollah really entered Syria to start fighting to help the Syrian regime regain, you know, upper ground against against the opposition. Hezbollah has been very careful in not provoking an Israeli Hezbollah war. You know, I mean, they have, you know, their capacities are big. That's not to be underestimated. I mean, they have battle-hardened, well-organized, well-disciplined force. They have the hundreds of thousands of missiles that you talked about. They have a will to fight, and they have a community behind them that is very resilient, that can withstand, you know, the fight. And so in that respect, they have the components of that are necessary to, you know, wage this fight. But at the same time, they are not strong enough or powerful enough to be able to wage two front campaign or three front campaign. So once they decided to enter the Syria war, Hezbollah has been very careful about not upsetting the status quo they have had in place on the border between Lebanon and Israel, the status quo that they have had with Israel. And so, as I said, in the past, whenever they felt the rules of the game established between them with Israel were violated, they resorted to very limited target, tit-for-tat retaliation, with, followed by quick messaging, you know, to the Israeli leadership via the United Nations, via third parties, that this is the limit of our retaliation. We are not going to do more than that. Partly not to provoke Israel into a larger war. And they have been very careful throughout, since, especially since 2012, in messaging, you know, to Israel that they are not interested in a war. And Israel also, likewise, has been messaging to Hezbollah they are not interested in a war. So there were, both parties have been interested now in maintaining the status quo. And so for Hezbollah, as a result of the Syrian war, they have now a quite skilled, battle-hardened force. They have now a regional role. They are seen now as regional players that has fighters or trainers working in Yemen with the Houthis, working with Shia militias in Iraq, working to support the Syrian regime. I mean, the Russian forces that are also in Syria look at Hezbollah with much more respect and reverence, in fact, than they look at the Syrian regime forces. You know, they say in many conversations I've had with Russian officials is that Hezbollah is definitely a disciplined, well-trained force, unlike the Syrian army, which is not that disciplined and no longer that well-trained. And so so Hezbollah has equities. What I want to, basically the conclusion I want to come to, is that Hezbollah now has equities that they have gained. They have spent blood and treasure in acquiring them. And so any war with Israel, especially if it's a major war, is going to lead to loss of these equities, you know, or major loss of these equities. And so that is part of their calculus. So when they think about cost and benefit of a war, they have to factor that into their calculation.
Hezbollah has also grown its political power base in Beirut, but Lebanon is a multifaceted society. How much support is Hezbollah getting from Sunnis, Maronite Christians, and the Druze? And would those groups go to war with Israel?
I think, thank you very much for the question. And it is a multifaceted society where Hezbollah is a major player in it among other political players. Hezbollah has definitely more military capacities than any other military political players as well, and more capacity, in fact, than the Lebanese army itself. It has more missiles than the Lebanese army has. However, Hezbollah's decision-making also has to be always constrained and factor into it how other Lebanese political players will react to any of their decisions. So, for example, we have seen that when Hezbollah decided to send its fighters to Syria to support Bashar al-Assad, this decision was done in contradiction to the Lebanese government decision at the time to disassociate itself from the conflict in Syria. Hezbollah said, we understand you took this decision, but we, you know, Hezbollah, for our own interest, for the interest of, I bet, Iran's, you know, Iranian interest, which is their main patron, we have to go and make sure that Bashar al-Assad stays in power. We cannot afford to have a government that is not pro-Iran and pro-Hezbollah in Syria. It denies them the strategic depth they need in their resistance, so-called resistance against Israel, or in their so-called fight against the United States. So that's what Hezbollah said. And so, I mean, the Lebanese government could not do anything to stop Hezbollah fighters from going to Syria. But at the same time, whenever Israel attacked Hezbollah convoys in Syria, whenever Israel even attacked Hezbollah Lebanese militants in Syria, Lebanese parties, the other Lebanese parties, did not condemn Israel, did not say we are going to war against Israel, because Hezbollah is there on its own, you know, decision to fight Bashar al-Assad, and it had nothing to do with the Lebanese government. Now, looking at the recent event, when Israel attacked, sent the drones to attack, you know, Hezbollah offices inside Lebanon, when it sent its drones in an area, which is the southern suburb of Beirut, which is heavily and densely populated, then you see all Lebanese officials, from the Lebanese president to the Lebanese speaker of the parliament, the Lebanese prime minister, all of whom, you know, belong to different confessional groups in Lebanon, all of them coming together around Hezbollah and the Lebanese president declaring that, saying that this amounts to a declaration of war by Israel. So whenever we are talking about Hezbollah, you know, Israel, in the future, if there is a war between Hezbollah and Israel, I expect all Lebanese parties, all Lebanese groups to come behind, you know, to come together in fighting, you know, against, especially if the aggression is to be instigated by Hezbollah. By Israel. So in the 2006, there was, you know, some debate about within the Lebanese population and Lebanese political elites, because they felt that the war resulted because of a decision by Hezbollah to go across the blue line, which is a temporary border established by the United Nations between Lebanon and Hezbollah, between Lebanon and Israel. So they decided in 2006 to send their militants across the blue line, kidnapped Israeli soldiers, and brought them inside Lebanon. And so you had then it was viewed as an aggression by Hezbollah, or as the aggression having been instigated by Hezbollah leading to the war. And at the time, you had a lot of, you had a lot of debates about why did Hezbollah do this. And even at some point, Hassan Nasrallah, after the war was finished, said, if I knew that this was going to be the result, this was going to be the Israeli reaction, I would not have done that. So that's why today, if there is a war between Hezbollah and Israel, and the war is instigated by Israel, then I don't see any kind of dissension happening among the different political groups and the different communities. Everybody will come together in support of Hezbollah fighting Israel. However, if the war is seen to be instigated by another Hezbollah decision that was not publicly supported, then you will see the same. You are not going to see that kind of coming together. But like in this recent incident when, you know, Israel sent these two weaponized drones into the southern suburbs of Beirut, there was a unified outcry from all the political leaders, from different groups, saying this was an attack on Lebanese sovereignty and requires a response.
Can Hezbollah count on Hamas or other Palestinian militants to help open up fronts in Gaza or the West Bank if war erupts?
In fact, in the lead up to recent Hezbollah's retaliation, which happened last Sunday, Hamas officials said that if this retaliation by Hezbollah will lead to will eventually be responded by Israel, if this retaliation leads to some kind of a regional war, because Israel decides to, you know, to up the ante and respond to this retaliation by bombing Hezbollah installations throughout Lebanon and Syria and others, that Hamas will then open the front and will engage in this war. So Hamas officials have been very clear, at least as recent as a week ago or even 10 days ago, that in case of a war between Hezbollah and Israel, they are going to be involved.
Randa, what do you see happening here if you look into your crystal ball? Do you think both sides will realize the dangerous possibility of what war brings both Israel and Lebanon, and they will return to a status quo? Or do you think that the potential trend line that we're looking at right now is pushing both sides indeed into a conflict?
Look, I think if we look at the precision missile project, which seems to be now the major focus of the potential conflict, Israel is not going to, I mean, has three scenarios, you know, to deal with it. Either we'll continue with these, you know, attempts at chipping away at Hezbollah's and Iranian capacity to develop this missile project, which have not resulted until now because the efforts to develop this missile project continue unabated. That's one scenario. The second scenario, Hezbollah has to go all in, you know, the major war, go maybe even send forces inside Lebanon, akin to what happened in 1982. And then you have a major war that is, doesn't involve only Lebanon, but it involves Syria, it involves maybe militias in Iraq, it involves in Hamas, you know, that's one way. And the third is that the two parties, you know, basically Israel has to come to live with this missile stockpile, especially precision guided. And there is some kind of an understanding developed between the parties that we require also an understanding between the United States and Iran, because Hezbollah's behavior, especially when it comes to the use of these precision-guided missiles in the future, is very much done in coordination with the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. So if we don't have this improvement in U.S.-Iran relations, and in fact, the trend line is to the contrary rather than in favor of that improvement, if Israeli officials keep thinking of Hezbollah's missile project as being an existential threat, Hezbollah is not going to stop this missile project, then I'm expecting that eventually we are going to hit a point when Israeli officials decide that the benefits of a war to undermine, delay, diminish these capacities that Hezbollah have in terms of precision guided, the benefits of the war, no matter what, I mean, will outweigh the cost. And there will be costs that Israelis have to incur. You know, there will be attacks on Israeli installations, major infrastructure installation. It will be a much bigger war, more devastating war than 2006. But then at some point, I think Israeli officials will come to the decision that even given these costs, the benefits will eventually far outweigh the costs.
It certainly promises to be very active along the Lebanese-Israeli border in the coming months. Randa, thank you very much for joining us here on The Crisis Next Door.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
We've been joined by Randa Sleem, Senior Fellow and Director of the Conflict Resolution and Track 2 Dialogues Program at the Middle East Institute. Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. Till next time.
The Crisis Next Door with host Jason Brooks is produced weekly.
If you have any thoughts for Jason, email him at tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com. Again, that's tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.